Welcome to the Foolish Adventure Show, where guru hype is banned, lifetime value of a customer is king, and the internet business has replaced the J-O-B as the path to financial success and personal freedom. Now, here's straight talk about making a living online with your host, Tim Conley.
Welcome to another episode of the Foolish Adventure Show. I'm your host, Tim Conley, and I've got my co-host here, Johan Woods. What's up, Mr. Woods?
What's up, Tim? How are you?
I am doing really good.
Good.
So, I want to talk to you about something that we are doing in the Foolish Adventure University for the online entrepreneurship program, and you just finished creating the customer development module.
Yep.
So I want to talk about that. And I was thinking like, okay, so how do I prep for the show? Maybe I'll call this customer development for online businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But that's who developed most of this customer development stuff. So, you know, like the startups that are really the whole lean startup movement is all about creating this, your customer development in the early stages of your business, so you get your product right, so you're not making big changes later when it's a lot more expensive. Mm-hmm. And most of those now are all online companies.
Yeah.
A lot of them are SaaS apps, software as a service apps. And so I was like, okay, so what's the catch here? Why don't more companies use lean startup methods or even lean product development methods? I guess you would call it, for programming, it's agile development.
Right.
Why don't more people do that in their companies? Why is it only these tech startups that are doing this? I don't know what to call it for the rest of us. Maybe customer development for the rest of us. I'll knock off Rob Walling's stuff, right?
Right. Yep.
One of the things that got me really thinking about this, about possibly why people aren't doing it, part of it is that a lot of business owners, a lot of entrepreneurs are not out there reading outside of their own industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not out there getting Lean Startups by Eric Ries. They're not reading Ash Moria's blog. They're not reading Steve Blank's books. They're not bringing this in. But another aspect I think it is you're going to contact these potential customers, these people who could possibly want what you're going to sell, and figuring out exactly what they want. And that's, as Dan Andrews calls it, a high friction activity.
Yeah.
And it's scary. And it's like, one, it's not scalable, so I don't want to do it. I want passive income, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to do all the hard stuff. I'm not going to do all the scary stuff. And so they end up going about building a company and they struggle for years and in some cases just completely give up and quit because they just couldn't get a business that matched what their potential customers really wanted.
Yeah. And I think that's the power behind the customer development process. And if you stick with it and if you do the high friction stuff, is that you'll shave off time, energy and money out of a huge long process of trial and error that you could have probably shortened at least by half if you'd actually speak with people. You know, if you do a phone call or meeting them or even via email. It's just otherwise what you're doing is that you're just, you know, if you're trying to serve a particular market, and you kind of, you know, you put up your landing page, maybe you send some PPC traffic or however you try to avoid the high friction stuff. Well, you could be spending thousands of dollars on the PPC, or you could be spending so much time and you're just taking stabs in the dark. You're just shooting in the dark. And you never actually hit that sweet spot where you're actually solving or meeting a need that's a must have for people, because there's no way you're going to truly find out what people want unless you ask them. And putting up a landing page or endlessly blogging about a topic, that's not you asking them. That's you just putting stuff out there and throwing enough stuff on the wall, hoping something will stick. And I'm usually in favor of throwing stuff on the wall. It tends to work out sometimes, but it's a lot of effort behind it. It's a lot of energy behind it, a lot of time, a lot of money. And still, you're not going to truly connect with your potential customers. And I think in order to have a successful company, you need to target something specific. You know, you need to have a specific product for a specific customer that's going to solve or meet a particular problem or need. Without that high friction, there's no high reward. It's like, you know, a lot of risk also usually means a high reward to something. And if you sidestep that and just endlessly blog or endlessly put up landing pages and drive traffic and just do all these other things around it, you're never going to get that connection and find that product market fit. There's just no way. And you'll spend time and money and effort that you could have put towards better things.
So what is customer development?
Well, man, that's a huge question. And I know I usually ask you big questions, so I'm going to do my best to live up to your standards here. Customer development, basically what it is that it's a process that you go through in order to discover, validate, and create customers and sell them a particular product or service. There's, you know, there's different phases to it and different stages that you go through in this process. And the goal is that, you know, at the end of it, you've discovered a market, probably usually a segment within that market, that you've validated ideas with them, which is that you know what they're looking for, whether that's solving a problem or meeting a particular need. And then you create customers out of that, meaning that you present them then with your product that's going to solve this particular thing that you guys have talked about. And then once you have that match where you have the right product for the right market, you know, the product market fit, then you go about scaling it. And then you go about actually building a company with all the different components that go into a company.
Right. You know, I would say that it's higher risk to wait build out your company and then have to change it later, because you've already invested a huge amount of time, which a lot of people completely undervalue their time. They may have invested money or other people's money by this time, and it becomes much more difficult to make these changes, because a change late in development means all the stuff that happened previously has to get thrown out the window.
Yeah.
So why not figure things out early by actually talking to real people? As Steve Blank says, you know, get out of the office, get out of the building, go out and actually talk to people and figure out what it is that they need and dive down into their real problems, because that is so much cheaper. It's cheaper in the cost of time. It's cheaper in the cost of money to be able to do that in the early stages. Because if you make a change in the early stages, well, what has to be thrown out? Maybe some sketches, maybe some wireframes, maybe just a few doodles on a napkin, right? That's all that's getting thrown out. But if you wait for a long time, what are you throwing out? Well, possibly your whole website. If you've built an app, all that code, the development time. So all those things have to just be thrown away because you didn't do the scary stuff in the very beginning of your business, you know, going out and doing customer development.
Yeah. I think too that, you know, everyone is always talking about, you know, what's my unfair advantage? What's my unique value or selling proposition? How can I be different in the marketplace? And it's a tricky question, because then you start looking at yourself, right? You start looking at your company and your product, and you try to look at it and go, from your perspective, how can you be different? But the true key to being different and having an unfair advantage is to actually go to your market and to your customers, because you need to understand how they view you and your competitors. Because, you know, you might think that, oh, my competitors are X, Y, and C, but your customers think that your competitors are A, B, and C. And it's all about looking at it from their perspective, stepping into their shoes and their world, and seeing and understanding how they view things and how they currently deal with, you know, a day in their life or their problems or their needs, whatever it is. Once you can get into that perspective, then you will discover what your unfair advantage is. And you'll know how to position yourself to be different and to offer a better value proposition than your competitors. So It's truly, it's all about them in that regard. And for me personally, with my business, I know that my unfair advantage is understanding my customers and clients better than they understand themselves and better than my competitors understand them. That's my claim to unfair advantage. I know that as long as I can keep up with and keep tabs of my clients and their needs, I'm going to have that. I'm going to be a couple of steps ahead of everyone else because everyone else is focused on navel gazing and looking at their product and polishing it and trying to figure out, you know, what would I like my product to do and be.
Okay. So how do you even find this out? Like, what things do you need to ask people to get that unfair advantage?
Well, there's different parts of this customer development process, different phases to it. And the first thing that you do, the absolute first thing you should do is you go on what they call the customer discovery quest, so to speak. And that's when you discover who your customers are and what they're looking for. And if you're starting out, I mean, you got to start from somewhere. If you want to build a web app or if you want to put together or have an e-commerce business, whatever it is, usually you have a starting point. You know, for example, I started out doing websites and web design. So that was my starting point. And then the way I took that then is that, okay, I went to different markets and different types of customers. And I tried to find out, you know, if you were to have a website, what would you like it to be? Like, what are you looking for? What purpose would you like it to serve? So you start off with some type of starting point of what you want to do. But then what you do is that you just, you know, if you have people in mind, that's great. You know, let's say you want to work with accountants and you want to build a web app. All right, well, go to these accountants and just ask them questions. You know, right now in the process of you doing your job, What are the problems you're encountering? What are the pain points that you have? Like, what are the issues that you have to deal with on a daily basis? And just asking these questions about their process or what they're doing to do their job. And once you start getting into these things, you know, they'll start discussing the problems they have, and they might say, "Oh, I wish I could do X in a different way. I wish I could instead of doing Y, I wish I could do Z." And so you put yourself in their shoes and you're asking them to describe a day in their life. And you kind of just understand from where they're coming from and what they're trying to achieve. You know, maybe an accountant would like to do their auditing faster, more efficiently and in a different way than what they're doing right now. And you just look at that process and you try to imagine, okay, this is the process from A to point B and the steps in between. And what can I do to improve that? What can I do to make it more efficient? What can I do to make it better for them in whatever way they're looking for? So just start from somewhere, wherever that might be. You know, for myself, it was websites. And then you just speak to the people that you'd like to work with, and you just discover what their problems are and discover what their needs are.
Okay, so I've done this quite a bit. And whenever I've asked somebody, like, what their problem is, I usually get, "I don't have enough time."
Yeah.
That's not really an answer because right. No one has enough time.
Right.
How do you get past the first answer that they give you? Because the first answer they give you in what I've found is never the answer that really solves their problem.
Well, then, you know, let's say someone, you ask them, if you ask a general question, like, "What's your problem?" It's not the best question to ask, but let's say you ask that question and they say, "I don't have enough time." And then you want to dig deeper with that. So you start asking why questions. For example, okay, you don't have enough time. Why would you like enough time? Like, what right now is the reason why you like more time? You know, and if you had more time, what would you do with it? You know, and okay, so you don't have enough time. Well, what's taking up most of your time? You know, what are the time suckers in your life or in your business that are just taking all the time you have and leaving you exhausted? So, you know, the first answer usually, and you're right, the first answer usually isn't the right one. You know, it's not the one you're looking for. But whatever answer they give you, you want to start asking why questions. You know, why is that important, or why would you need more time? And if you had it, what would you do with it? You know, what would your life look like if you had 15 extra hours per week? You know, what would you do then? And so it's important to go deeper than the first answer. Ask why questions, why something is important, why they're looking for that, why is this a problem for you, why is this a pain for you, what would you do if it was different? And I would also say, if I was starting out from scratch and just, you know, opening up a conversation with someone, I would ask them about their process in relation to something. So, for example, if I do web design, then I would ask them about their current websites. And I would ask them, you know, what are you happy with? What do you don't like about it? So I'd ask more specific questions than just simply asking, what's your problem? Because that's not going to give you much. But just, you know, start with them describing their day or their process for doing something, and then just dig deeper with the why questions.
Yeah, Toyota has the five whys that they promote in their management. So you would ask why, and you get your surface answer. Yeah. The first thing that pops into somebody's head. And so sometimes this is just what's the big problem that they have at the moment, because that's how humans are. Whatever's on their mind at the moment, that's their biggest problem. Even if it's something trivial. So you have to get past that one. You know, you always have to get past that surface answer. And then you ask, well, why is that an issue? Then they tell you an answer to that. And then he's like, well, why the next level, right? So you go deeper each time with your why. So Toyota has determined that within five why questions, you've gotten down to the core problem. And that allows you to start coming up with solutions.
Yep.
And that's one of the great things about the whole lean startup method is that it gets past the idea of I'm going to build a solution and then go find somebody to buy it.
Yep. And that's a classic mistake.
Yeah. We're always in this. And I do it. I do it all the time. I think, oh, wouldn't this be awesome?
Right.
It's natural, right?
The moment you think that you think something would be awesome, that's usually the kiss of death right there.
Yeah. So we all start off with a concept. And it's almost always starting with the solution in mind without truly identifying the problem. What's the problem that's going to be solved? What's the desire that's going to be fulfilled? We seldom ever start there. So that's what the whole lean method is. You know, you go with customer development and you actually determine what their real problem is so that from that you can start figuring out what the solution is going to be.
Right. I mean, you know, the key question you want to ask yourself in the beginning is, you know, do I have a problem that's worth solving? You know, is it because, you know, everyone has problems and issues, needs. But what you want to get to are the problems and needs that are like, you know, deep, like they're must haves. You know, having a solution to them is like imperative for the survival of their business or their life or whatever it is. You want to really find those type of problems and needs. The ones that people are going, you know what, I wish I had a solution for this, and the type of problems that people are looking for a solution for. Because, one, you know, otherwise, you know, if you ask me, you know, hey, Johan, what problems do you have? What needs do you have? I can give you a list of like 50 things, but it's only like the top 3, 4, or 5 that are like I'm actively trying to solve. And those are the type of problems and needs you want to target. You know, not the ones that are kind of ambiguous and, you know, it would be a nice to have a solution to it, but you want to go after the type of stuff that's a must have and the stuff that's like imperative that you find a solution for. It's imperative that you find a way of meeting that need. And that's the idea behind doing the customer development is that in the early stages, when you do your customer discovery and customer validation, that's when you're looking for those problems. And then you extract them out of the market and you say, okay, these are the top, you know, top 3 or 4 or 5 problems they have in regards to something. And then you start pairing up possible solutions to those problems. Instead of going to them and saying, here's my solution, what do you think? You know, you're not gonna get true accurate feedback on that. It's better to say, okay, I came to you and I asked you about your problems. You told me 3 problems that you needed solved. Well, here's what I think we can do to solve them. What do you think? And that's when you, you know, bring up a product, and that's when you bring up a solution after the fact, after you know what kind of problems and needs are the most desperate for them.
Right. What I really like about this method is that we're in an age where it's not whether something can be made,
Right.
It's whether it should be made.
Right.
The industrial age was all about, can we even make this? But now we're in an age of, well, should it even be made in the first place? Because we can actually make pretty much anything now.
Yeah.
So we need to really determine, should this even be made? And this goes from everything from software to physical products to information products, getting into some niches. Should it be made? It can be made. We already know it can be done, but should it be done? And that's what I like about this method is we're able to figure out whether it should be done before we ever start making it.
Right. And one thing I want to add to this, because I can already see people yelling and screaming about this, you know, oh, Steve Jobs said that people don't know what they want. And first of all, I'm going to call bullshit on that. Excuse my language. I'm going to call BS on that. And it's a poor excuse to not do work because, sure, people might not have specifically in their mind a specific way of solving a problem. But you're not looking for them to necessarily give you the solution. You're looking for them to tell you need, and then you bring possible solutions in front of them and you give them the options of, you know, for problem X, we can solve it in A, B, and C. You know, what do you think would work? And you work together with people to find that perfect fit for your product. But just people use that excuse that, oh, people don't know what they want. It's used as an excuse to not do the work and to not do things, and work with a particular market. It's just, the only thing you're buying yourself is enough heartache and headache to go around. You know, it's just having that attitude is not going to get you anywhere closer to finding the right product.
I'll jump in on that, where Steve Jobs is saying or said that people don't know what they want. And that's true when it comes to innovations. Okay, mm-hmm. We don't really know what we want because it doesn't exist yet. So humans will create a desire in themselves after they know there's something available for it.
Yeah.
When Steve created the iPhone, he already knew that people wanted smartphones. They already existed before the iPhone.
Yeah.
The innovation was coming up with an app-based smartphone with the touchscreen. Made it awesome, made it really pretty. That was really the innovation. If they would have asked people, well, what do you want? They'd have said, well, I want a bigger keyboard than what BlackBerry gives me.
Right.
You know, that they wouldn't have said the things that they ended up truly loving about the iPhone. But most of the customer development had already been there. They could look out at the marketplace and say, well, people want smartphones.
Right.
And they extrapolated from that to create their innovations. So when it comes down to innovations, true, you go ask people what they want. Like Henry Ford said, if he had asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses and not cars. And so there is those innovations that you're going to just have to guess in some cases.
Yeah.
But it's always better to guess once you've got some information ahead of time. The more information you can get from your marketplace, the easier it's going to be for you to create something and then innovate off of that creation.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. And I think too that, you know, it's not necessarily about even asking people, what do you want? Because, like, you know, people want a number of things and a few things aren't even possible to make or create. Again, I think just, you know, go back to the fundamentals here, which is speaking to a particular set of people. You know, if you're a business working with other businesses, you know, you find other businesses and you look at the world from their viewpoint and you understand where they're coming from and what they're trying to achieve. You know, once you know what problems are and so on, then you can really probably also innovate from that, because often what you'll find is that, you know, people are doing something in a particular way. And once you understand that process and how it fits in with their workflow or their daily flow of doing tasks, then you can kind of spin off of that and you can come up with some incredible things too out of that. So it's not like you have to start from scratch and complete blank with nothing previously being there. Innovation is just simply taking something that exists and then turning it into something that's, you know, almost unexpected in a sense. You know, it's something that didn't exist before, but it still has its basis in something that already was there. It's just done in a different or new way.
Yeah. That, like the touchpads on like Apple products.
Right.
I did not know I needed this.
Right.
Yeah. It was given to me and it's like, wow, this is so much better than a mouse. It's so much better than the trackpads that were on the old PCs, the trackpads that you get on an Apple. It was like, oh my gosh, I am not ever going back to the old way, because the old way totally sucks. When I can sit here with my hand and move it around with gestures and do things so much faster and more intuitive than I had been doing previously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are those innovations you're going to get, but even trackpads came out of stuff previously.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those all came out of customer problems.
Right.
Okay, so how do we know if we're on the right track? How do we validate our ideas after we've talked to a person or people? How do we actually know whether or not we're on the right track? What do we do from there?
There's a number of criteria you can have in mind as you're discovering these things. And let's say you're starting from the beginning and you've done your research and you've come down to, okay, this particular market and these customers, they have these top three problems, you know, whatever they're in relation to. And at that point, you want to look at those three problems and you want to ask yourself a series of questions. The three most important things you want to ask yourself is, you know, is it something that customers actually want? Like, is it a must-have? And number two, can you actually do it? Like, hoverboards, I love, like, from Back to the Future, I love to have one of those. But so far, the technology combined, the combination of technology to make that happen, it's not there yet. So the second question is, you know, is it feasible? Is this something that you can actually put together and give? And the third question you want to ask yourself, which is equally important, is will people pay for it? You know, will people pay for a solution to this? So is it viable? So those three criteria, you know, is it a must have? Is it feasible? And is it viable? Those three criteria is something that you want to have in mind as you go through this process, not just with the problems, but also with the solutions that you come out with. You know, does your solutions meet these three criteria? And that's kind of the fundamentals for it. And there's obviously other criteria too, once you start, narrowing down exactly what you're doing. But the most important ones, is it a must-have? Is it feasible? And is it viable?
You know, I was just sitting here as you're saying that, I was just thinking about one of the foolish members. He was, and I don't think he'd have a problem with me mentioning his name. His name's Seth Jackson of How to Run a Band. And he was saying he was having a hard time actually getting people to buy. And so he had these concepts of, well, people who are in a band don't spend money. Yeah, they're cheap. And I hear this a lot about all kinds of markets, that, oh, people don't spend money. They only want to get free stuff, or they only want to buy cheap stuff. And that's not true. It's that you don't have a value proposition that they find important.
Right.
And so what I told him to do was go out and find out what they value. We want to know exactly what a band values. What can you bring to the band that would make their life better? Yeah. And the only way to do that is to, you know, get them on the phone.
Yeah.
At first he was saying, oh, you know, maybe some pay-per-click, you know, some things that were going to be really complex. And I said, what you should do is just ask people to get on the phone with you.
The easiest solution to that problem, right? Like, why make it more complicated? And I'm sorry for interrupting you, but it drives me nuts sometimes. It's like, okay, the time you spend putting up a landing page with a PPC campaign and doing all these other, you know, circling the wagon, you know, you could have spent 5 minutes finding a band, calling them up, and gotten your answer by the time it took you like a week to put this whole landing page process together. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's the easiest thing to do in the world, and it seems hard, and it sounds frightening, but it's like it's gonna be quicker to speak with someone directly than it is to try to drive traffic to a landing page or to blog endlessly for weeks until something might hit. Do you see what I mean?
Right, right. And so the other ideas that always come up are, well, what about surveys? You know, I'll do a survey, and I'm like, okay, that's great. In college or university, depending on where in the world you're listening from this, in university, I learned how to do a research project, and it sucks because you have to, if you're going to do a survey, you have to know how to ask a question without it being leading or without it end up causing you to get vague answers. And, and even then, with the internet, you put up a survey, you send people to a survey. A lot of times you're going to just get bogus answers.
Right.
that they're going to say they want Mickey Mouse because people are just going to have a laugh with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to get all kinds of answers. So some of them are not going to be useful, and you're not even going to have enough answers from enough people to get anything that's closely statistically relevant. So it could send you somewhere in a completely different direction. And the other side of communication like that is you may misinterpret what they've written.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because as an entrepreneur, we already kind of have an idea what we want to make, and we'll interpret people's answers to fit what it was that we were going to make.
Right. Yep.
so the big solution is to actually talk to people. And so Seth asked, well, how do I go about that? I'm like, do you have an email list? People are on Twitter, ask them. And so he did. He went out, asked people if they would get on a call with him. And he got a really great response. He got several people who wanted to get on the phone with him. And when he started talking to him, he said it was amazing. He's like, I learned all sorts of things about my marketplace by actually talking to band members about the issues that they have. And it really gave him a lot of knowledge. So it really gave him the power to go forth with his business, because, you know, before he was like struggling to give them something that they valued. And so he was kind of taking the approach of like 37 Signals, which was scratch your own itch. He's been in bands. He thought he really knew the problems and the things that bands would value. And it turns out, well, talking to people really changed his whole perspective of what his market really wanted. And now it's helping him actually go forward in his business a lot faster.
Yeah. And I think just to add to that, you know, you were saying before that if you have, you know, a survey or whatever you use, you'll misunderstand people's answers. And it's like, you know, if you had a survey and you asked people, you know, would you pay $50 for this? And if you get an answer that says yes, well, okay, you know, what if people would be willing to pay $75 for it? You know, you don't know. You don't know that. If you're speaking with someone and you ask them, would you pay $50 for something like this? If they immediately say, yes, absolutely, then you could probably charge more than $50. If they hesitate and there's like a delay with their answer and they might go, yeah, probably. Like, that's a different answer than yeah, probably. It's like there's a difference there in tonality. And these are cues that you won't pick up unless you're actually having a conversation with someone. And it's not that it has to be in person, but at least on the phone. Because then you'll notice subtle things that could, you know, could change things. Because you might go ahead then and create your product for $50. But, you know, 6 months down the road, and you raise the prices, you realize that, oh, man, I could have sold this for $75. And you just missed out on 6 months of sales where you could have charged significantly more for a product. So there's a lot of things that you'll miss if you're not actually speaking with people, you know, on the phone or Skype or in person.
Right.
Subtle things that, you know, are easily to miss otherwise.
Yeah, because you can't dig. You can't really get true answers to your why questions through a survey.
Yeah.
So surveys are great later in your business.
Yeah.
Because you've got more data, there's things you can extrapolate from that. But mm-hmm. in the very early stages of creating your business or even creating a new product for your company is to go out and actually talk to people. Don't be afraid to engage in high friction activities.
Yeah. And the thing too, to keep in mind, and I found this to work for, you know, for myself, and I know it works for other people too, is when you're starting out and you're just asking people, you're not pitching stuff, you know, you're not trying to get them to buy your product. You're not, you know, you're not doing a full on selling with them. You're asking them questions. And I have yet to come across someone who's upset with me because I'm asking them questions about, you know, their work or what they're trying to accomplish. You know, like you'd be surprised, but people are more than willing to speak about themselves.
Well, as long as you're not trying to manipulate them.
Exactly. Exactly. And when you're starting out, you know, I always approach the people I speak with very transparently. I tell them, you know, I'm thinking about putting together a product for X, you know, and that people like you in your position or the type of business that you are, that you'd find useful. However, I'm not here to pitch you anything. I'm not here to sell you anything. I'm here because I want to ask you about your business. I want to ask you how you do things. And I want to try to understand you and see how, what your day looks like. And if you come, you know, if you come with that attitude, if you come saying things like that, you'll find that, you know, the people who are willing to speak, they're more than willing to answer your questions. You know, it's, you're not going to speak with everyone because people are busy and they have other priorities. But if, you know, let's say you approach 50 and 15 of them reply back and say, yeah, we can get on the phone. You know, the 15 you speak with are going to give you invaluable insights into their situation and into their problems and needs. And if you just approach it with openness and honesty and you say, like, you know, I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm just trying to understand your process. You know, I'm trying to understand how you currently do X or how you currently do Y. And you have a conversation with them and you ask them those questions and you go into the whys and you dig deeper and just trying to discover at that point, you're trying to discover problems that are must have, feasible and viable.
Very cool. Very cool. So, What kind of final words of wisdom can you tell people when it comes to customer development?
When it comes to that, I'd say, you know, what we already discussed, obviously speaking with people is important, but obviously do not neglect the kind of general market research because you want to get as much of a full picture as possible. So there's, you know, the research that you do, they're done in two ways. You know, one is that you interview potential customers and you speak with them. And the other part is also to do market research. You know, you find out right now, what does the marketplace look like? You know, what products are selling? Where do people go to find out information? Who are the big players? You know, what exists already? So don't neglect either one, but just, you know, do both of them. And the last one thing I want to say is, you know, I had this issue when I started out, which was that, you know, there's no way people will speak with me. There's no way I'm going to be able to do this. And I was hiding behind, you know, the website. I was hiding behind the landing page. I was hiding behind all these extra stuff. And I was hiding behind, and people are going to kill me for this, but I was hiding behind inbound marketing. You know, these things don't matter yet. Unless you have a product market fit, inbound marketing is not going to do squat for you. Once you have that product market fit, then you can worry about scaling your outreach and scaling inbound marketing and so on. But when you start out, there are so many things you can just ignore. And the one thing that you need to focus on is finding that problem that's worth solving, that people will pay to have it solved, and putting together a solution with that problem that people will buy and find that product market fit. Until then, until you have that product market fit, until you're able to know that, okay, this is my product, this is who it's serving, you can ignore 95% of what everyone else is doing. It's not going to do much for you. Those are stuff you do later. So don't hide behind those things. You know, just stare your fears in the eye and say, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to find out what I can serve and how I can serve people, and then go do that first and then worry about the other stuff later.
Very cool. Very cool. You know, I haven't done something for a while, which is giving some shout outs back to the people who have left iTunes reviews. One of those things that I should be beaten for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, So I can't actually read off all these because we got a whole bunch since the last time I did this. So I'm just going to pick a few at random here and just say thanks to these people. So we've got Best Business Podcast Ever. from Claudia, which is awesome. Thanks, Claudia. Another 5-star review.
Nice.
I love everything about this, from the name to the format to the content. Even their voices are delightful. All right. I got a delightful voice.
I'm just singing yet, and, you know, keep that going.
Yeah, no singing on here. I think people who want to build their own business crave information like this, not only because we need to learn about business, but also because we feel safer knowing that there are more people out there to whom we can relate to. Thank you, thank you, thank you. No, thank you, Claudia. Also, we got Taylor Pearson, who says, Tim kills it. And with a 5-star review. And yes, I am all about killing it. I got turned on to the Foolish Adventure Show a few months ago, and I have to say it's an absolute staple in my podcast rotation now. Tim manages to blend high level strategy and low level tactics in a way that leaves me walking away from every show figuring out new ways to crush it in my business. Keep rocking, Tim. Taylor, you keep rocking. And we've got, and so here's the last one I'll do. So we've got Dead Simple and Pertinent Dished with a Dash of Humor.
Wow.
Man, that's a lot of D's right there. I love alliteration, but man, that one was hard to say for me. And and it's by Darlene, all right? Dead Simple Dished with a Dash of Humor from Darlene. I love that. Love that. 5-star review.
Nice.
If you're looking for real info on creating an online business, this is one of the top 5 podcasts to listen to. One of? Come on. It's the top podcast to listen to. Come on. Oh my gosh, Darlene. Love you and all, but you know, I got to be the top, not one of the top. I really appreciate getting these reviews. I do read every single one of them. I publish them on the Foolish Adventure site. You can go there, see the iTunes review tab. Just go click on it. You can read the reviews. And you can always click over to iTunes, leave a review. It really helps the show. It helps us have a bigger impact in the world by helping us rank higher in iTunes and bringing more people into the Foolish fold. So please go out and do that. And until the next time,
enjoy your Foolish Adventure.
You've just listened to The Foolish Adventure Show with Tim Conley. To get more straight talk about making money online and building a successful internet business, go to foolishadventure.com. There, you can opt into the Freedom File newsletter. You'll also get access to the Foolish Guide to Launching Products video training module, over an hour and 20 minutes of business building knowledge that can generate tens of thousands of dollars for your new product. Enjoy your Foolish Adventure.
For some reason, every time I say Seth Jackson, the thing that pops into my head is that one song.
Outcast, right?
Yeah. So it's like, sorry, Seth Jackson.
Yeah, I am for real.
that pops into my head.
Yeah.
I don't mean to make your startup cry.
Yeah.
I am for real. Yeah, always pops into my head.